Hello and welcome to the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Nick Hodge, co-owner and editor of Foundational Profits and Hodge Family Office, two different publications that go out to different groups. Some is more focused on the macro themes that are in the marketplace. And then the Hodge Family Office is really on the more speculative side, investing in junior mining stocks like many of our listeners do on this call. And Nick, it's always great to have you on the KE Report. But it was also great to see you in person. We were out the Vancouver Resource Investor Conference, the VRIC conference, ran into each other in the hallway briefly. Nice to see you in the flesh. And I guess I'd just like to start off, Nick, by getting your thoughts on coming out of conference season in Vancouver in January, what your read on the sentiment was, any particular themes that caught your eye, any particular commodities that caught your eye. What was your main takeaway from the VRIC?
It was good to run into you as well, and it's a pleasure to be back on the show. Thanks for having me. The questions you ask always make me think, and so it's a pleasure to come on here and share my thoughts and sometimes refine them in the process. The conference was very well attended and had a very bullish sentiment to it. It had only been 6 or 7 months since they had the previous VRIC. If you remember, they had one in May of 2022, and so it hadn't been a full year as it typically goes, having it every January. So, but nonetheless, in that short amount of time, 6 or 7 months, I think sentiment really changed in the commodities complex, in the natural resource space, and people seem to be all bulled up. So just from a sheer attendance standpoint, the numbers I heard were 6 or 7 months ago at the last one, there was, 1,500 people. And at this one, there was 5,000 people. And I gave an individual presentation, and then I sat on two uranium panels. And the one uranium panel I was on was standing room only out the door with some people sitting on the floor. And it's been a while since we've seen that. Now, I know the uranium crowd, the retail crowd is more ravenous than, maybe some of the retail crowd for other commodities, tin or copper, for example. They get really bulled up. But nonetheless, I saw people there looking for ideas, obviously sitting in on the talks. And that to me says that, investors are doing their research, thinking about coming back into the space, looking for the good ideas. And so it was a pleasure to be there. If you want me to talk about individual commodities that I think people are interested in, I already mentioned uranium. I think lithium is super hot right now and potentially even a bit frothy as it relates to, there's a big boom going on in Quebec and the James Bay region with a big discovery that Patriot Battery Metals had. And full disclosure, I'm a shareholder of that company. Wrote a check at 34 cents Canadian, I believe it was, and that stock hit $17 in the last week. So, there's a lot of people interested in looking for companies that are close to there, and I saw a couple of those at the conference. Midland Exploration was one. Brunswick Exploration is another one that's been having quite a good run. I don't own either of those. And, I think people are getting really interested in gold. It had run up $300 heading into the conference, and people are worried about a recession. Inflation is still sort of sticky high, although it's been coming down for the past, whatever, 6 months or so. But I think people sense that we're in the middle of a commodity super cycle, and they want to put that to work in their portfolio.
Yeah, Nick, I kind of got the same takeaway myself. And I think Corey, same kind of reading that there was a lot of bullish sentiment, which was interesting because we haven't seen that in a while, especially after really 2.5 years of the grind downwards in gold and silver prices. But even some of the base metals, which had some nice runs in earlier 2022, had pulled back at the end of last year. So to see the general enthusiasm for commodities across the board was nice to see, but at the same time, you're right. There's certain commodities like uranium, like lithium, that have still garnered more support from the retail audience and even from institutions. I was wondering, one of the themes that we hear a lot is the importance of critical minerals, the battery metals narrative, the electrification of the world narrative. So that plays into copper, that plays into nickel, but it seems like there's still more interest in, more of the uranium and lithium side of it than there is in copper and nickel and some of the other important components. What's your read there on the critical minerals trending right now? And will the base metals like copper and nickel get that same kind of investor fervor that we've seen in lithium and uranium?
Yeah, so I think what's happening, and this is what I was talking about in my talk, is that, copper is part of the CRB commodity index, and obviously is part of that electrification of everything, the EV narrative, the grid build out, all that sort of stuff. But it's still Dr. Copper to the world. And so if the world is facing an economic growth slowdown, which I believe it is, I think you get back to flat or negative GDP growth in the U.S. here in Q1 and Q2, it's tough for it to mount those fears and continue its ascent. And that's the reason I think you're seeing gold pull back. You know, it had a nice run from the middle of last year where it bottomed out at 325. It ran to over $4.25. And in the past month or so, it sort of topped out there and has pulled back down closer to $4. I think that's copper being the doctor, right? Telling you that all is not well with economic growth. When you look at, and the same thing has happened with natural gas, for example, you know, went up to $10 last year, has pulled all the way back down to three. Oil went all the way up to $120, has pulled back down to $75. Those are all the ones that are, you know, facing demand destruction or that traders trade down when they think that the growth is going to slow. And I think that's what you're seeing. And then there's commodities that aren't a part of that CRB commodity index that aren't, you know, generally indicative of economic growth and that are relatively insulated from, you know, demand destruction fears or recessionary fears or slowing economic growth fears. And we've mentioned them already, you know, the lithium and uranium. You know, uranium is in a structural deficit. Reactors run 24 hours a day. They're baseload power. They don't get turned off. Utilities need to buy uranium, keep those reactors running, whether or not we're in a recession. And so I think uranium is relatively insulated from those fears that I was just mentioning. And similar story with lithium, which is already in a shortage. You know, we were talking about the VREC. Simon Moores from Benchmark Mineral Intelligence was presenting there. And, you know, he's been pounding the table for a couple of years about how these lithium prices aren't going to slow down. You know, how many more dozens of lithium mines need to come online in the next 8 years just to meet the base case EV targets that have been put out there, let alone some of these, you know, high growth EV scenarios. And so, you know, you've had lithium prices that doubled in the past year and are up, I don't know, 1,000% in the past 5 years or something. And so that makes lithium, you know, a high margin sought after commodity. And it has things going for it that the coppers and the tins and the nickels of the world don't, in that one, it's very high profile with all the EV announcements you see. But now we're seeing, you know, direct investment. One from the U.S. government has come in and provided loans to lithium companies here in the U.S. And in the past week or so, we've seen GM come in and invest directly in the lithium supply chain, which large automobile manufacturers typically don't do. A similar story with uranium. You've got the Department of Energy now contracting directly with domestic producers. And so those two commodities are relatively insulated, whereas the ones that are typically, historically, indicators of economic growth, the oils and the coppers that I already mentioned, are softening, because I do think we're going to continue to see a slowing of economic growth. That all makes sense?
Absolutely, Nick. Some cogent points there. And we have been covering the trends in uranium and lithium and many of the energy metals for a while on the show, and the supply deficits. I guess I just have one question, though. With uranium, it seems like they had a nice run coming out of the pandemic low and all the way really into the end of 2021. 2022, uranium stocks pulled back a little bit. It doesn't seem quite as frothy as you mentioned the lithium sector, which there's no doubt that lithium prices have scorched higher and that there is definitely a demand side of the equation here that needs to be filled. But we have also seen a lot of companies come into production, some of the larger companies expanding production. But we're seeing, Nick, now about 150 names in the space. And there's the Me Too factor, where a lot of gold companies are now changing to magically finding pegmatites on their project. And we're seeing that kind of thing. Are you at all concerned that maybe a lot of it's already priced in at this point?
Yeah, it depends on the company, I'd say. So you mentioned the pegmatites, right? Now everybody's got a pegmatite play in Quebec or Ontario. And, you know, the same things that have been going on for, I don't know, 200 years in the mining space. I was reading this book about the discovery of the Comstock load and how the promoters, you know, would promote their properties, even if they didn't have good indications, just because the whole area was heating up. I mean, that was in 1850 or thereabouts. And, you know, it's 2023 and the same thing still goes on in the mining and prospecting business. So as some of these companies you mentioned, you know, changing their name or some of these companies that were, you know, previously looking for a gold or a base metals deposit and now suddenly have pegmatites, as you say, you've got to really do your diligence, right? You know, not all pegmatites are spodumene bearing, for example, and they'll conveniently omit that fact and tell you they have pegmatites, but won't tell you that those pegmatites don't contain any spodumene, for example. And so, you know, some of these companies have clearly gone up too fast. And, you know, I always say trees don't grow to the sky. So, I mean, and this is why you got to parse it out. So, you know, if you have a company like Patriot Battery Metals, which I've already mentioned, some might say, like, you know, I missed out. That stock is, it's literally up 10,000%. I mean, it's gone from, you know, 10 or 15 cents to $17 inside of a year and a half. But when you look at the results they're putting out and the trend of pegmatites that they're hitting, I mean, it's kilometers long strike. I mean, they just stepped out, I think, at 400 or 500 meters in the last drill results that they put out, and they're hitting, you know, 5% spodumene over tens of meters. When you put that to a resource calculation, something like LeapFrog, or if you talk to geologists who can calculate that, you know, they're quickly growing to a resource that's going to be something like 150 million or 200 million tons. And then you look at these companies that are nearby, and by the way, that justifies the market cap, right? Because if you look at some of these, you know, bigger lithium companies, Pilbara, for example, you can sort of do the math based on the resources that they have and say, okay, well, you know, Patriot Battery Metals, it does have $1 billion market cap, but you can justify a $2 or $3 or $4 billion market cap based on those grades and the size of the expected resource that we're going to get. As some of these other companies have doubled or tripled or more and, you know, haven't stuck a drill in the ground. They just have a pegmatite trend or, you know, they've announced that they've acquired property in a closeology fashion. And so I would say you really got to do your diligence. You really got to listen to people who know what they're talking about, and not just me, but, you know, other newsletter writers as well. You know, sometimes I approach my due diligence like I do a recipe, right? If I'm going to cook something that I've never cooked before, I don't just, you know, Google one recipe and follow that to a T. I might read, you know, 5 or 10 recipes and take the best attributes from them and then make the dish, you know, on my own. But leaning on those, you should be taking research from multiple sources, not just one person. But I do think some of the closeology plays have gone up too fast. And again, trees don't grow to the sky, so expect a consolidation.
Yeah, good thoughts there, Nick, not just on how to invest in resource investing, but also recipes and cooking. So, but it's a great point in getting a well-rounded education and making sure you get a range of opinions. Just one more quick one before we move on from lithium. There's also been a big trend in direct lithium extraction companies where the idea is they're going to go into old oil and gas wells or some other place where they've got some of this lithium brine consolidated and use an extraction process without having to do a lot of heavy lifting on the mining side because these wells or these reserves, reservoirs already are there in place. What do you make of that trend? A lot of those haven't really made it into production yet because the chemistry is a bit of a science experiment, but there is a lot of companies rallying behind the direct lithium extraction banner. What do you make of that trend?
I haven't done the work to give you a well-informed answer, so I'm going to refrain from doing so. But I will say that as the world needs more lithium, as the price stays elevated, there is, of course, going to be new things that come along. On the battery side, they're going to try to reduce the amount of high-cost inputs, whether that's lithium or cobalt. You'll see new battery chemistries coming out, still dominated by lithium, but trying to reduce the amount of inputs that go into them. And then on the mining production and processing side, you're going to see, you know, new technologies be adopted as a function of, you know, needing to satiate that demand at a much higher price, which I was mentioning earlier. And so direct lithium extraction is one. The other one that's been around and hasn't been entirely proven yet for half a decade or longer is, you know, generating lithium from clays as opposed to brines or hard rock. You know, I think both the technologies, direct lithium extraction and extracting lithium from clays, are going to be viable in the next 10 years. But I haven't done the work yet to give you individual names or say I'm bullish on this technology or that technology. And the last caveat there is, you know, be wary of black box technologies. I've been around long enough to see my share of black box deals. So we have this new processing method, we have this new extracting method, we have this new refining method, and it always takes longer to prove and to scale than any of the pitchmen think. And that's if it works at all. So just beware when you're looking at those new technologies that haven't been proven out yet.
Yeah, great point, Nick. We have seen a lot of those in any of the commodity sectors where there's some special black box technology that never quite seems to make it there, but definitely a lot of innovation in the space, definitely a new technology, and we'll probably see continued breakthroughs because the demand is definitely there. But we were talking about the commodity super cycle, and you were mentioning that some commodities like uranium and lithium are a little bit more resilient than some of the ones that maybe face recessionary pressures. What's your take on if we are actually going to be entering a recession or not? We have been talking in the last couple of interviews, Nick, about us being kind of mid-cycle through the recession, maybe two more weak quarters. But we're seeing a lot of news recently where a lot of financial pundits are saying, hey, maybe we're going to have this proverbial soft landing. We had a better than expected jobs report. We had a better than expected manufacturing report. Seems like there's a little hopium out there in the financial media. What's your take on it, Nick?
My take is a bit confused right now. That jobs number that came out, 517,000 jobs or something, you know, it wasn't even in the realm of what the market was anticipating. You know, I'm not sure when the last time was the expectations were so far off. I think the expectations were 180 some thousand jobs, and it came in over 500,000. If you listen to the bears, it's because, you know, people are looking for more jobs. They need two or three jobs to cover their rising cost of living because of the high inflation. And that's not necessarily indicating a soft landing to me. I look at other things like credit card debt hitting a record, or people falling behind on their credit card payments that typically pay it off every month. These would be people that, you know, are making six figures, and that lifestyle creep and the increased cost has made it that, you know, if they had a $5,000 or $10,000 credit card bill every month that they typically paid off, they're now starting to fall behind on that. And then the classic indicator is, of course, the yield curve, which continues to remain inverted by nearly 0.8% at this point. And the reason it's doing that, I don't remember if we talked about this the last time or not, is that the two-year, the short end of the curve has remained elevated. I mean, if I pull it up on a chart, you've got the U.S. two-year yield, it's still up at 4.5% or 4.4%. While the 10-year yield has been falling off, now down around 3.6% or something. And you know what that, you know, historically indicates is that long end of the curve, that 10-year bond is falling. And that's indicative of slowing global economic growth. At the same time, the inverted yield curve says that we are going to have a recession. And so in recent writings that I've been putting out, I've been calling it a double whammy recession. We had sort of a short recession last year. We had two consecutive quarters of negative growth in Q1 and Q2. And then, you know, Q3 and Q4 were a positive economic growth here in the U.S. I think you get back to flat or negative GDP in the first and second quarters here. The other thing is corporate earnings. I mean, if you look at the S&P, the earnings growth is significantly slowing down. And I pulled it up here this morning just so I could get it right. You've got basically 300 of the 500 S&P companies have now reported their Q4 earnings, and earnings growth is negative 3%. And that's going to contract even further in the coming quarters. And then I think the last thing I'd point to that's really got, you know, people saying that the bottom is in for the broader market, you know, that stocks have bottomed, that we're now in a new bull market is, and I'm not an options expert, but I've been seeing more and more about this, is this advent of short duration options, options that expire in 0 or 1 days. I don't know if you've come across this at all, but basically the volatility index, the VIX, which, you know, is the quintessential fear gauge, or what people point to as the fear gauge, has, you know, bottomed out down around, you know, 19 or 20, indicating that there's no fear in the market. And the problem with that reading is that the VIX only takes into account options that expire, you know, in a month or more. And what's happened here over the past couple of weeks is these short dated options, ones that expire in 0 days or 1 days, have been over 50%, 50% of the options market, which is relatively unprecedented. And so it's making that volatility reading be a false sense of hope, I would say. And so I get that the technicals have technically shown that, you know, the S&P is above its 200-day moving average, or, you know, has broken out of a downtrend. But I don't see the fundamentals there, as evidenced by the GDP and the earnings growth that I just mentioned, to sustain that. And then, you know, that's all fundamental readings. And then anecdotally or psychologically, I haven't seen that capitulation yet, right? I'm still seeing people wanting to jump back into Tesla. A lot of those short-dated call options, you know, have been on these historically meme stocks, or these stocks that the Reddit or retail crowd was into, and they haven't been shaken out of the market yet. Look, Bed Bath & Beyond was filing for bankruptcy this week, and the stock, you know, I don't know, went up 3 or 4 times or something like that before pulling back. That's not how markets bottom out. That isn't the capitulation you need to get into the bullish phase. And so I still think we have some down legs to go in the broader equities before we truly bottom out. And parlaying that into the commodity space, which I know your readers are more interested in, I think it's an opportunity, right? So I'm of the belief that a new commodity super cycle started in 2020 with the onset of COVID and the washout that caused in the early part of 2020. And the commodity index has screamed higher since then. You remember that oil went negative and then went up to 120, for example, or corn went from $3 a bushel to $8, and wheat went from $2 to $8 or $10 a bushel. And now we're seeing that commodity index sort of pull back. If you look at it on an annual basis, it's actually flat. But that doesn't mean that we're not in a commodity super cycle. So if you look at the entire cycle, you go back to 1994, when the last one began, it ran hard all the way until 1997 and then pulled all the way back to flat at the advent of the dot-com crisis in 99 and 2000. Gave up all its gains that it had made since 1994, but nonetheless, it remained in a super cycle that picked back up and, you know, ran all the way until 2008. I think that's sort of where you are now, right? You're going to get a pullback in these commodities that are in the CRB index, and it's a great opportunity to establish or build positions, especially in the commodities that we know we're going to need substantial amounts of over the coming decade, particularly, like, I would be using this opportunity to scale into copper.
Well, great thoughts there, Nick, and we'll wrap it up there, but nice to hear your outlook on the macro thesis, where we're kind of at in the cycle, and how that ties into the commodity super cycle and some of the different metals and minerals that people invest in here on the show. So always appreciate getting your thoughts on a wide range of topics. It's always lively, Nick, and if people like getting Nick's thoughts, definitely check on the link below to Digest Publishing that takes you over to get a source for all the different products they offer investors. And Nick, looking forward to our next conversation, as always.
Me too, Chad. Thank you for having me.